Hello, and welcome to the Awaken to Wholeness Summit. I'm Val Silvedker. We are about to have a conversation with an incredible thought leader, someone who has been in my awareness for quite a while. I used to be an adjunct professor at Florida International University, where I taught ecology and sometimes deep ecology. And I did a program in the deep ecology class that I would bring in and screen a film called The Global Brain. Well, I'm really excited to introduce you to the man that actually coined the term the global brain, wrote the book, created the film, Peter Russell. Peter coined the term the global brain with his 1980s bestseller of the same name, in which he predicted the internet and the impact it would have on humanity. His other books, which include Waking Up in Time and From Science to God, and his visual presentations and videos have won international acclaim and awards. Weaving his unique blend of scientific rationale, global vision, and intuitive wisdom, Peter Russell brings a sharp, critical mind to contemporary spirituality and the challenge of self-awakening. He distills the essential wisdom found in the world's various spiritual traditions, revealing the limitations of the materialistic worldview and why the essential nature of the cosmos is more like mind than matter. A teacher of meditation for more than 40 years, his approach emphasizes complete effortlessness in meditation, a letting go of any expectation or control. The beauty of this approach is that nothing needs to be changed or eliminated. It is simply surrendering to the fullness of the present moment. Absolutely beautiful. Peter, it's so exciting for me to have you being, you know, you've been so present with me throughout my work and my teachings. Thank you for being part of our summit.
Well, lovely to be with you. Yeah.
Awesome. And you have had such an incredible life. You've just really done so much. I know you have degrees in theoretical physics, experimental psychology, and computer science from the University of Cambridge in England. And you were a student of Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so curious as to how that, you know, played a role in your life and your passion for consciousness and spirituality.
Right. Well, it was at Cambridge, you have this relationship with a postgraduate. He just finished his PhD, so he was a postgraduate student, and you're assigned, each undergraduate student is assigned a postgraduate student who is, the technical term is supervisor.
Right.
So he was my supervisor, supervising my studies. So each week I go and see him, and he, you know, he'd set me problems to solve, etc. Well, I don't know, did you see the film on him?
You know, I haven't watched that film. I haven't seen that
The
yet.
Very opening is he's sitting in someone else's supervision. Maybe just realize, that's exactly how it was the other way around. Yes, so he was still, his illness was just coming on, but he could still walk and could still talk. And he was just, it was always humorous. Very clever, but always humorous and very humble. He just didn't let his illness get to him. But that was really about physics. He was, you know, he was working with me on quantum physics and relativity, that area. He wasn't really interested in consciousness. And I was just getting interested in consciousness at that time, just getting interested in meditation.
So how did that unfold for you?
I was realizing that however much physics I did, it wasn't really going to answer the questions I was getting more and more fascinated by, which was, why are we conscious? You know, why is there consciousness in the universe? I mean, here I was doing, solving Schrödinger's wave equation, which means nothing to most people, but it's brilliant. From pure mathematics, you can start deriving the properties of atoms and how they function. And so, you know, the universe started from just empty space and hydrogen, and it evolved into a being like me who could do the mathematics and study the universe. And yet nothing in science predicted that any of us should be conscious. And yet the whole thing of science, any theory of science is tested by, what does it predict? Does it predict the world correctly? And nothing in the science I was studying predicted that any organism or human being should ever have an inner experience. So it struck me there was something fundamentally missing from the current scientific worldview. And I'd always sort of been interested in consciousness. And so that's what took me into beginning to explore it in more detail. In fact, I I moved out of physics eventually and moved into experimental psychology, neuroscience, thinking that would help. And I learned a lot about the brain and neurons and memory and all that stuff. And still nobody was interested in consciousness. And then I realized the way you study consciousness is not by sticking electrodes on the brain. You have to look at it yourself, observe it, go inward. And so that's how I started getting interested in Eastern teachings and meditation, and went out to India and studied meditation for a while. So that was really the shift, just like seeing this huge question that wasn't being looked at in science.
And isn't it such a familiar journey from the psychedelic experience to the mathematical and physical, you know, the physics, and then traveling to India? Like, there was this kind of journey that we saw taking place in a lot of people around that.
Yes.
Yeah. Like one thing being called to the other.
Yeah. And I think there was that realization that, you know, the East had offered ways to, you know, raise one's consciousness, explore consciousness. We didn't need psychedelics. And there was that whole sort of subsequent to the psychedelic revolution of the 60s, there was this whole secondary revolution, which is like, leave those behind. We all went off to India.
Right.
Looking for wisdom there.
And it seems that here's the story. It's like, you know, looking at the science of it all and it not being enough in that moment in time. And so needing to then go into those Eastern, you know, invitations of going within and sitting within and listening to the wisdom teachings that are passed on from generation to generation, mm-hmm. how that moved through so many people simultaneously, sort of a collective journey.
Yeah.
That time. Well, you know, in science to God, you mm-hmm. wrote about the evolution of consciousness coming into our to become self-aware. And so here you are, you know, coming into the space, exploring consciousness. I would love for you to take us through that journey of how you see the evolution of consciousness into our self-awareness, into this
yes.
knowing experience that's in the universe.
Well, I've come to the conclusion now that everything is conscious, mm-hmm. that ultimately consciousness is a quality of the cosmos itself. It isn't something that comes out of the human brain. So it's something, it's like any, I think any living system has a degree of consciousness. Even just a simple cell has a very, 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 very simple consciousness. And what's happened is as life has evolved, so the inner world, the consciousness has evolved with it. And then, you get to reptiles, etc., where you begin to get emotions. And then with mammals, you get the neocortex, and you get, with human beings, you begin to get thinking. And I think thinking comes from language, really, the fact that we can speak to each other. And because we can think, we can begin to think about our experience. And as we think about our experience, we recognize, hey, I am experiencing. There's a self, or so it seems. There's a self that is experiencing. And so we become aware that we are aware. So I think, you know, a dog is aware. A dog, I think, you know, is aware, it's smelling, it's seeing, and it's feeling. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't pause to think, oh, I'm aware. It just gets on with being aware. Whereas what human beings can do is we are aware that we are aware. And that, I think, opens the door to the whole spiritual search, which is really, I think, ultimately, what do we mean by awareness? And what is the self? And who am I? These fundamental questions.
Absolutely. And so this idea that, you know, consciousness simply is, and that through our complexity in our evolution, right?
Yeah.
That we are coming in, we are coming to understand the consciousness that has always been here.
Yes. And so now that we are self-aware, it was like the next stage in evolution is to do this exploration, to begin to explore our own consciousness and what it means to be aware, and seeing how we get caught up in our thought systems and things, and how can we really free our mind? How can we free our awareness so we can actually be the wonderful beings we are?
And it seems like there's an explosion of that happening right now.
Like, yes.
We're really hungry for it. It's like life is calling us to know ourselves.
Yeah.
On a much deeper level.
I think it's, I mean, coming back to the 60s, it started back then. And, you know, in those days when I first started getting interested in consciousness, there was one, you know, the main bookstore in Cambridge, the second biggest bookstore in England, had one little shelf up in a corner with sort of alternative spirituality on it, books by Alan Watts and Christopher Isherwood. And you know, translations of the Upanishads and things, but that was it. But then it's been growing and people have been doing their own research, and now you go and, you know, any medium-sized town has a bookstore devoted to, you know, this whole area of spirituality and consciousness, and just the videos, the audios, the internet is full of it. And all of this is because there's people doing their own studies, learning, putting out what they learn, just as you're doing with this series. Everybody's just putting it out there. We're all learning from each other.
Yes.
And that makes it go faster and faster. When you have that sort of feedback in a system, the whole thing just takes off. And that's what we're seeing today.
Yeah. And I think a lot of self-experimentation, as well as far as like just, you know, diving into what's in our inner world and then talking about that, you know,
yeah.
community.
Yes. Yeah. And the more we share, the more other people learn, the more we learn from them. And it just keeps on growing and growing. And now it's almost, you know, virtually mainstream when you've got corporations, you know, priding themselves on the fact they're teaching mindfulness.
Yes, that's the buzzword, isn't it?
I was teaching meditation in corporations in the 70s, major corporations, and they made me promise I would never tell anybody I was teaching meditation in the boardroom of these corporations, because they'd be so embarrassed, they didn't want the media to get hold of it. Now, you know, they're giving press conferences on it. I mean, that's how much things have changed.
Yes, definitely, definitely. I mean, and even in, you know, when you see like even team building and things like this, is they're bringing in mindfulness.
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence and things.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah. So interesting. That's so true. And another thing that's really rising right now is this whole, I mean, it's been here, but we're seeing a lot of it now, is a sense of non-duality.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're very much a part of that, and that's something that's very prevalent in your life. Can you talk to us a little bit about non-duality and how you see that marriage of sort of science and spirit?
Right, right. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what non-duality means. I mean, some people think it means that everything is one. It's all just one. It doesn't really mean that. Or it means, you know, we've got to get over the duality of male, female, whatever it is, good, bad. It's not really about that. It's really the fact that there is duality. There is difference insofar as, you know, we live in a world of form, and, you know, this wall over here is different from the table here. They're different. There's all these different forms, and yet they're all of the same essence. Everything is ultimately of the same essence. And that's what it's really about. So there's a unity and a duality. So it's called non-duality, meaning it's not just two. There's a oneness and a two-ness together. In fact, I mean, the earliest teaching on it in the Upanishads is this teacher who says, you see these two bowls of clay. He said they are two different bowls. They are completely separate, independent bowls, and yet they're both made of clay. Neither would exist without the clay. And yet the clay isn't changed by becoming a bowl. The clay itself remains unchanged. What appears is the name and form. And we live in the world of form and name. And then there is this underlying essence. And in a way, science is non-dual in that respect, that science thinks the underlying essence is matter, energy, space, time. And what the spiritual teachings are saying is that actually the underlying essence is more like mind, what we might call consciousness. So that's sort of one aspect of non-duality. But then another aspect is there isn't really a duality in the mind. We think, you know, there's me here observing my experience. I have all this experience, what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, what I'm feeling in my body, my thoughts. And we think there's me here, an observer, observing the experience. But when you look at it, and this is what many philosophers have realized and the non-dual teachers, when you actually look inside yourself, there is no self. There is no observer. There is just experiencing happening. And sometimes in that experience, you may, you know, have an experience of self or ego, but they're just other experiences. So ultimately, it is all one in the mind. And I suppose another aspect of non-duality from that is there's nowhere we're trying to get to. It's really just awakening to the actual nature of how things are.
Yes.
And so that's why, you know, many teachers say that there's no path. It's not about trying to get anywhere or reach some altered state of consciousness. It's really just about letting go and relaxing into your own natural state of mind.
Yeah, that right there is a powerful statement, because I think a lot of us in the world are always looking for that next thing to bring us somewhere. There's kind of a seeking.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
enlightenment is something to attain.
Right? Exactly.
Right.
So I don't even like the word enlightenment.
I know.
It implies there is something to get or somewhere to go. And it's really just recognizing, you know, the nature of awareness itself, that we are aware, and recognizing that rather than just understanding it. It's like being aware that we're aware, and just coming back to that, yes, that ever present state of being that's always there, which we label I. We make it a thing, we label it I, but it's really just our own beingness, which is never changes, is always there. It's that same feeling of being that I had when I was 10 years old or 20 years old, that sense of deep meanness, I-ness, yes, which we can actually define or put a finger on, but we know it so well, so well. But we're so caught up in what we're doing, what we're thinking, all of that, that we never pause to notice this quality of being that's always there. So that's really what I see non-duality is about. It's about getting back to just recognizing the truth of our own nature.
Yes, that's it. And it's interesting, because in a lot of the conversations that we've had in the summit too, this is a theme that keeps coming up, is being present to what's here now, on every level. You know, even the things that feel uncomfortable or scary or whatever it is, you know, rather than trying to distract ourselves with focusing on something else, it's allowing it, just kind of allowing it to be what it is, and tapping into that ever all existing, any, you know, timeless, spaceless awareness. I wonder how, so with all of that in mind, how do you see, with our continued complexities and evolution, how do you see consciousness deepening from this point on? Where are we heading, Peter?
Well, I think, you know, one thing we've already touched upon, I see it just becoming more and more mainstream, more and more people beginning to wake up in this way. So I see that's really what's beginning to happen now, and just growing faster and faster. And then part of this waking up is really letting go or stepping out of the ego mind. And I call it the ego mind. I don't like the word ego, because it implies there's something called an ego. If I look inside myself, I don't find anything called an ego. What I find is I get very caught up sometimes in egocentric thinking, which is like thinking about what do I want, what do I need, what's going to keep me safe, how do I survive, how can I be in control of the world to get what I want. So it's egoic thinking. It's a mode of thinking. Mm-hmm. And as you begin to step back and recognize that sense of presence that's always there, that brings with it a sense of ease and relief and a sort of deep sense of okayness, that things are deeply okay, even though there's maybe a lot of problems to handle, that you feel okay in yourself. So you're not going out trying to get things or make things happen in order to feel okay. If you're okay already, you're much freer to just respond to the situations at hand, the needs, in whatever way they need responding, which is much more coming out of love. Because the ego is basically coming out of fear. It's coming out of fear, and it wants to be in control of things to deal with what it thinks might go wrong or is going wrong or has gone wrong, whatever. And that's, you know, at the moment the world operates on that. It operates basically people living in one, maybe not big fears, but just the whole nature of the ego mind is discontent. It's discontent. Something needs changing, and if I change it, I will be content again. Whereas the irony of it is the thinking of the ego mind creates discontent. And if that were to just stop, we realize the natural state of mind is one of contentment. And so we can find, you know, the goal of all our desires without actually having to go and fulfill them all. And so there's a freedom there. We can get back in touch with a much deeper sense of love and acceptance and compassion. So I see as more and more people are waking up in this way, we're moving into a society which is going to be less driven by ego and fear, and increasingly allowing people to come from a place of compassion and love. And I think that's what we really need.
Yeah, that is what we really need. And I think when we're talking about love, you know, that doesn't always imply, and even in being the okayness, doesn't always imply, certainly doesn't imply not feeling deeper emotions that sometimes are sticky and uncomfortable. Like,
absolutely.
You feel for the world. As a matter of fact, I think it's China Galland. She wrote something that's, you know, our choice is to be in love or to be in fear, and to be in love is to have a mountain inside of us. You know, mm-hmm. to feel the pain of another inside of us is to feel the pain of the world inside of us, because yeah. it's part of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, love sometimes isn't the best word. I mean, a better way to put it is just an opening of the heart. An opening of the heart. And when we open the heart, we can find, you know, our own natural lovingness. Yeah. But also, it's with an open heart that we can feel the pain, the discomforts, the distress, the unhappiness that's there as well. There's opening to the whole breadth of emotions.
Yes, beautiful. The broken open heart. And at the same time, though, I want to say that I love the word love, because what it evokes inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's the whole idea that we only really grieve for something that we love deeply. You know, that we feel the depths that we feel because we are so in love mm-hmm. with life and with the earth and with each other, with ourselves.
Yeah.
That becomes a motivating factor for us to want to dive in, to right. want to know what's here, and to yeah. want to show up in the world to be part of this movement yeah. of evolution.
Yeah, I think people sometimes have this idea that, you know, waking up, you know, that they get this idea of detachment. We're just going to be detached and live in this sort of airy, fairy, peaceful state and not be concerned, which is not the real understanding of non-attachment. Right. Non-attachment really means you're not caught in the belief that you've got to have things be a certain way in order to be happy. That's what non-attachment is about. It's not about being detached from things. It's being even more involved with what's going on, because you're free from all this conditioning that actually keeps us down.
Yeah, absolutely. And also not getting so, whatever the emotion is that you're feeling, not allowing it to not allowing yourself to feel so overwhelmed or paralyzed by it.
Yeah.
So then we become this the idea of ourselves seeing ourselves and witnessing yeah. the emotions without becoming the emotion. Where right. I can't get up in the morning, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's probably, you know, coming back to the non-duality, I mean, one of the fundamental distinctions is, instead of saying, you know, I am sad, you know, the subtle difference is I'm experiencing sadness.
Yeah, yeah.
The I isn't identified with the sadness. The I is still there, or that sense of being is experiencing sadness, which is... It's different from just I am sad, which is like when we identify the self with something.
Yes, absolutely. It's a really important thing. And it is interesting how when we say things a different way, we have a different feeling towards it.
Yeah.
And that is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It just creates a sense of freedom from it.
Mm.
We're no longer the victim of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's that shift from ego to the true self. The ego is always a victim of what's going on. And the true self is almost in a way unaffected. I mean, the eye that is watching is just observing the experience.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we can step into. And I know meditation is now a really important part of your work, and what you're bringing people into is this experience of sort of an effortless experience of meditation. Share a little bit of that with us, as far as you know, how meditation should be effortless. And
yes, I think there's so much misunderstanding crept in about meditation. It's like we got to try. Part of it is this thing about trying to get somewhere. We're trying to get to some state of consciousness or something, or we're trying to, you know, still the mind, get rid of the monkey mind. I mean, everybody, if they close their eyes, they notice that there's thoughts coming in all the time. I think, oh, these thoughts are getting in the way of meditation. I've got to stop these thoughts. So I must really concentrate and discipline myself. And you know, it doesn't work very well. So, you know, you just have to try harder, and we try even harder. And someone says, there, I told you it was difficult. And I mean, we're so conditioned in our life that if you're not succeeding, try harder. And meditation for me is the exact opposite. It's undoing that conditioning. And it's really about allowing the mind to relax back into the present moment. And you can't try to relax. They're just pushing in opposite directions, pulling in opposite directions. So for me, meditation is about allowing the mind to settle down and finding little ways in which we unconsciously almost try to put effort into meditation without even realizing it. I mean, I remember a few years ago, I had an experience which just totally brought things home. I was just having my daily meditation, and it was, you know, it wasn't as, you know, deep as some other meditations. And so I was sort of, part of me was thinking, well, this is okay, but, you know, I'd like it to be deeper or quieter. And then just realized that's another part of what is happening in the present moment, is my thinking it could be different, and realizing just the wanting it to be different was actually in the way. And as soon as I just included that thought and that experience in the present moment, everything just released. And it's like, ah. So yeah, you can't try to meditate. They're like, they're pulling in opposite directions. So a lot of what I do with people is weeding out these little ways in which we unconsciously put a little bit of effort or trying it. And when you weed those out, then you just find the mind just very easily just drops into silence. It's very easy.
Why do you think it's so challenging for people to do that?
I think it's just a misunderstanding that's crept in and been promoted by a lot of people who say it is difficult. I mean, a lot of Indian teachings, you know, say that the mind is like a wagon load of monkeys. You've got to concentrate and do this. And this misunderstanding just it's got spread around. But I think what's happening with a lot of contemporary teachers these days is realizing this is a misunderstanding of the mind. And that when we really relax, it's almost like we fall into this. We fall back into ourselves.
Right, like you were saying, our natural state.
Yeah, fall into our natural state of mind. And it's our thinking that keeps us out of it. But rather than trying to stop the thinking, I mean, my basic instruction in meditation is not to try to, you know, keep thoughts out. But when you realize you've got caught on a thought, don't follow it. What we do in daily life, we follow our thoughts. You know, one thought leads to another because we think they're important, they're interesting, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And in meditation, we're sitting down for whatever it is, you know, 15 minutes to meditate. And we know there's nothing important to do because we've set aside the time to do it. And so when thoughts come, it's just like saying, okay, and just relaxing. You'll find the thoughts bring in a sense of tension into the mind. It's just like, okay, relax again, come back to the present moment. And there's various ways of coming back to the present moment, but it's coming back to the actual experience in the present, because the actual experience is always in the present. The thoughts are always taking the attention off into the past or the future somewhere. So it's bringing the attention back into the here and now.
Yeah, absolutely. Bringing the attention here, and how that's different from mindfulness practice. We were saying, like, such, you know, we were saying earlier, it's such a buzzword.
Yeah.
And we're putting our awareness on something, like a mantra, or, you know, we're putting our awareness there. Here it's more about relaxing our sense of attention.
Yeah. It's similar. I mean, it's working on a similar principle. With mindfulness, you're coming back to the present moment, whether it's coming back to the breath or the body, and those are very good entry points. Although I do find that, you know, people unconsciously start thinking they need to hold the attention to the breath or the body. It's like they've got to keep the attention there.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of just letting the attention rest in the moment. And ultimately, as people get more and more familiar with that inner stillness, the inner silence, that sense of being, you just come back to that. You don't need to go through all this other stuff. Once you recognize the inner being, the stillness, you can just, let me just come back to that, and just savoring that feeling. that just allows us to just drop straight in.
Yeah. And here now, meditation being an invitation into connecting with the deeper consciousness, the deeper sense of who we are.
Yes.
What a great call, as we're talking about, like, the evolution of consciousness, or the evolution of our complexity into the consciousness that always is, you know, and meditation being this gateway into ourselves on a deeper level.
Yeah. It's a relaxing of consciousness. Mm. And we just, there's that feeling, oh, yeah, here I am. I'd forgotten myself.
And which, you know, our world does not exactly invite us to do that. And I think, you know, we're so, it's interesting. So I think about the global brain and this amazing ability for us to connect the way that we do, and in a sense evolve exponentially because of that. At the same time, being that we're all addicted to screens now, like, we're on all these screens all the time. We're constantly fed this kind of stimulation, and the buzziness and the busyness of our world, and how that impacts the way that we think and the way that our minds work, and sometimes then our inability to be still.
Yes.
Be able to sit in meditation without feeling like almost like itchy.
Mm-hmm.
Or to be doing something.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, the whole of our culture is taking us in the other direction.
Yeah.
It's distracting us with one thing or another, you know, buy this, do this, you know, watch this. And as you say, the technology we have is just even more seductive. We're making it more and more seductive. It's almost, the job is to make things, you know, more exciting, more entertaining, more seductive, more important. And all of that is taking us away from ourselves. So it was like Emerson said, he said, the whole society is in conspiracy against the selfhood of its members. And that was 150 years ago he was writing that.
Right.
And, you know, it's just got more and more true. It's, everything is telling us, do this to be happy, get this to be happy, this is how to be happy. And all of it is actually really making us maybe a little temporary happiness, but taking us away from that true happiness that is there inside if we just release and let go.
Which is ultimately what we all want.
Absolutely. I mean, what we all want ultimately is to feel okay, whether you call it happiness, peace of mind. We want a better state of consciousness. That's what we're looking for. And we're trying to get a better state of consciousness by changing the world in some way, modifying the world, instead of recognizing that it's all our seeking. That attitude of looking out there is that seeking, which is actually veiling that natural state of consciousness, which is a sense of okayness. Yeah. It's like, I just like okayness. It's the most neutral word I found.
I like it. It's true. I mean, just okay.
We want to feel okay.
There's an intensity happening right now. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's just allowing it to be what it is.
Yeah.
Interesting. I feel like, you know, we have so many extremes happening right now. So we've got all of this buzziness and this sort of distraction from ourselves, and we're so hungry to connect with ourselves.
Yeah.
Remember our interconnectedness with life. And so there is this sense of, you know, like yoga is sweeping the nation and mindfulness is the buzzword, and all this stuff is happening right now because we may not know exactly how to get there, but we know we want to, we know we need to.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing this movement happen now everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's part of the great waking up, is recognizing, and it's all our striving and all our thinking, which is actually stopping us really having what we ultimately are looking for.
How do you think that this kind of awakening to understanding ourselves and the movement of consciousness, how do you think that that's playing out in our world right now? You know, with this sort of, I would say, like, paradigm struggle. You know, this kind of worldview struggle that's happening right now. Part of our world is clinging to these ideas of separation and caught up in the movement of it all without ever stopping or sitting still. Another part of our world is aching to connect and feel into the sacredness of life. And mm-hmm. how do you see that playing out right now?
I think it's a eternal deep challenge, and it's in us all. It's in us all. It's easy to see it in the world and see, oh, them are the people who are caught up in materialism, etc., and we are the ones who know what it's all about. there's the us and them is inside each of us. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I can get easily caught up and think, oh, if I just did this or had that or whatever it was, I'll feel okay. And I can get caught up so easily in that materiality, and I know the other side. And so it's a continual, I think it's part of the awakening, is that continual reminding, recognizing what's going on in myself, and like waking up each day many times in the day. It's like, there I go again.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same in society. That it's, I think there is a waking up that's going on, and it comes out in, you know, whether it's coming out in some, you know, article somewhere in some magazine or on the web or in some movie, there's continually getting reminders about what it's really about, and then we get sucked in again. And so what we need is just lots and lots of reminders, and gradually we begin to see that the old way doesn't really work. And I think that's where we're going collectively, is realizing that. I mean, we've come a long way in the last 50 years. I mean, you know, clearly when you look at the news and things, you think, have we? But I think we really, really have, in terms of just, you know, just the awareness of our own selves and meditation, things we're talking about, were hardly there 50 years ago. And the fact, you know, we can have these conversations and, you know, everybody's getting interest in this area. That says we've come a long, long way. So I think it's just, it's really a question of which team do we want to be on? Which team are we playing on?
Yeah, we're invited to make choices right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I love what you're saying too about how it's part of each of us, because we do. We all have that. We live in this world. And we're so conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
Think a certain way and act a certain way and be part of it. And so the biggest thing for us is to be so aware of that. So that moment to moment, I love how you said that, we keep awakening. Moment
yeah.
We keep coming back to that awakening multiple times a day. We're like, oh, here I am. I'm recognizing that I'm in this world.
Yeah, and we can do it many times. I mean, one thing I teach people is what I call micro meditations, which are like short 2 or 3 seconds. You don't have to sit down or anything, but just to pause your thinking. You know, it will start up again, but at any time you just recognize where your mind is, where it's going, what story you're engaged in, whatever it is. And we can all pause that for a second. We can just say, stop. And it doesn't stop for long because we're so, you know, conditioned, but we can just say, pause, stop. And when you do, you just notice there's that sense of, yes. There is that underlying sense of clarity or peace of whatever it is. And it's just, we're tasting it. We're just getting a little glimpse of it. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get sucked back into the world. But just, you know, each time we do that, we just pause for a second. And it's like, yes. Mm-hmm. We're just reminding ourselves. Yeah. And in a sense, that's what we're all, you know, we're doing on a daily level as we meditate. You know, we're that part of our culture, which is just stopping and pausing and saying, yes, this is true. You know, what all the great teachers have spoken about is true. And we're recognizing that truth for ourselves.
And so you talk about letting go. You kind of spin on that.
Letting go, I think is what all the spiritual teachings are really talking about. Well, they call it letting go, surrender, forgiveness. It's all coming back to the same thing of letting go of our attachments. It's almost like releasing our minds from the grips that our thinking, etc., has on it. But what I found is, I mean, everybody wants to let go. I need to let go of that pain or that relationship or this or that or this discomfort I've got. But we treat letting go as something to do, and yet you can't actually do letting go. It's that same thing. You can't try to relax. You have to allow letting go to happen. And so what I found is I reframe letting go as, first of all, letting in and then letting be. So if there's something you want to let go of, instead of trying to push it out to the edge of our consciousness, supposing there's, you know, I'm feeling some anger towards somebody and I want to let go of it. What I tend to do is I push it out the edge of my consciousness. Say, if I keep it out there, it's not going to affect me. I'm in control of my life. I can get on with things. But all the time we do that, it's actually subtly controlling us. And that's what Carl Jung meant when he said, what we resist persists. Mm. What we push out the edge of our consciousness stays there. It persists. Yeah. So the first thing to do is to let it in. Like, okay, if I'm feeling angry, notice that, feel it, feel what's going on in the body. Let it in rather than pushing it away. Allow it in. And usually you find it's not nearly as uncomfortable as you felt. And then just allowing it to be there. And what I found is when you just allow things to be without resisting, there's a sort of magic happens. They begin to just sort of dissolve and unwind of their own accord. And it's not just with emotions, it's with, you know, thought systems we're caught in, or, you know, sometimes, you know, something in the body, some discomfort in the body or something. Just instead of trying to get rid of it or take a painkiller or do something else or push it away, do the opposite, you know, feel into it. What's it actually like? Yeah. What's this discomfort, this pain? What's it actually like? Let in the feeling. And when we do, it's like magic happens. And I think it's our resistance that is the problem. And so letting go for me is about letting in and then allowing things to be as they are.
Yes, beautiful. That's the great invitation of this moment too, especially with everything that's happening in our world and how we're all holding it, you know.
Yeah.
Tendency to want to run away.
Yeah.
Face our fears and not face those, you know,
yeah,
feelings that are inside of us right now.
Yeah.
Is to really allow.
And also letting go of our judgments and opinions as well, which is just, you know, interpretations we're holding, and who knows whether they're right or wrong. It's just, but it, you know, that just, you know, often say that the opposite to love is not hate, but is judgment. Mm. And if we can let go of the judgments and opinions we're having, we can just be much more open to what the situation is like, really like. And I think we know this deep inside. It's not like we're trying to discover something we don't know. We know all this wisdom inside. It's our holding on which is keeping us separate, keeping us away from what we know.
Yeah, and the attachment to the stories that we've created.
Oh.
As individuals and as a society, as collective, you know,
we yes.
agreed upon, the lies agreed upon, you know, the illusion agreed upon, and we get so stuck in it. Sometimes it's really hard to let go of that. And I think we're seeing a lot of that too in this feeling of us versus them. Mm-hmm. There is an us and a them. We're really inside of us. We're all holding that within us.
And when
we recognize that, it becomes a commonality, a common point, a place, a space that we can all connect.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So Peter, I, you know, being that you're in this space of teaching now these beautiful effortless ways of coming into our meditation, I wondered if you have an embodied experience or a meditation that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. Yeah, maybe just a simple, just the essence of the sort of meditation that I like to teach people. Yeah. How long should I do it for? How long do we have? What, you like 5 minutes or what?
Sure, 5 minutes or so, whatever feels good to you. Something that we can all experience, you know, get an embodied experience of what we're talking about.
Okay. Great. Well, the first thing I do is just ask people just to close their eyes and just to close your eyes and not do anything, not try to meditate, just notice your experience in the moment, and you notice the sound of my voice. You may notice other sounds in the room. You probably notice sensations in your body. Notice thoughts drifting in. Maybe feelings that are there. We're just noticing what is and just allowing it to be there, just exploring how it is, just to allow everything to be there as it is. And you probably notice the body just gently moving as you breathe, not doing anything with the breath, but you notice we're always breathing, another experience we don't normally notice. So we're just letting the mind relax into the present moment. And the attention will go to different places. It may notice some sensation in your hands or your feet or your face. Or if you notice any tension or something, then just open to that. Just notice what that feels like. We're not judging anything and not trying to get anywhere in particular or have anything happen. But just allowing ourselves to relax into the moment. And inevitably, as you do this, you will find the mind wanders off on thoughts. Lots of different thoughts can come in. When you find you've wandered off or wandering off, don't feel you've gone wrong. It's completely normal. Happens to all of us most of the time. But just when you realize you've wandered off, then just very gently, without any effort, just let the attention come back to the experience of just being here, noticing the sensations in the body, the sound, just noticing the feeling of being here. And we're just letting the attention rest in the moment, not trying to hold it to anything. Don't put any effort into this. We're just letting the mind relax, just letting the attention relax. In fact, whatever your attention may be in this moment, just letting it soften, just letting the attention itself soften, putting less energy into being aware. As we let the attention soften, we can just see us, feel ourselves just coming back to that sense of being, that sense of presence, which is always there but not normally noticed. And again, when you find yourself wandering off, just gently, very gently, just bringing the attention back to being here. Letting the attention soften and relax. And I find if you are noticing some feeling of greater ease, relaxation, something of that nature, stillness, a little bit of that, just to allow your inner being to smile, just as a little recognition that this is something we're enjoying. And again, if we just allow ourselves to relax and smile into it inside, that again can just allow us to be even more at ease with the experience. So in all of this, we're just allowing ourselves just to settle down, relax, and be at ease with what is. And then just noticing how it feels to be more at ease. And then just gently coming back into a more active mode. Just when you feel ready, just gently opening your eyes again. And coming back into more active mode of being. But keeping in touch, it's good just to keep in touch with that sense of, if there was some sense of ease or stillness, just continuing to notice that as you move into action, coming back into listening to the conversation you're having.
Yes, that was a great reminder that it can be that easy to just be in that okayness.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even like right now, personally, I'm holding something that's, you know, a dear friend of mine is going through cancer, and it's been like sitting with me and just bringing everything that we talked about into that and just holding her and being with what is, you know, was really there in that space with her. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. And I, of course, we had the special effects of the lights going off and the lights coming back on. The accent, this awakening.
The world is conspiring to help you.
I'm telling you, everything is here to support all of us in this moment, in this conversation. You know, it reminds me, you know, I have a meditation practice. It's been a somewhat scattered lately because I have a toddler and I don't always get to find the times like I used to in this particular period of my life, but how important it is for us.
Yeah.
Important. It is like one of the most important things that we can do.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, when you do it, it's like when I, you know, when people do meditate, it's like, ah, of course I need this. And then we get so caught up in our lives, we don't have time to do it, or we forget to do it or whatever. And what I suggest to people is, you know, some days you don't feel you've got time, you've got to rush off, you've got to do this. I say sit, even if you sit for just 10 seconds, 30 seconds, to have the habit of stopping and sitting, even though you know you've got no time at all, you've got to go and rush out and do something, just come down, sit 10, 15 seconds and then get up. It just keeps that habit going. And then when you've got more time, you can sit for 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, or even those micro meditations, did you
call them? Micro meditations, just stop, just pause the thinking. Yeah.
Come back home. Okay,
come now, back home.
Wait, come back home, move forward.
Yeah. But it's like coming home to oneself. Yeah.
It really is. And then again, you know, being able to connect on a deeper level to this movement of consciousness that's within us, so that we can make more, aware, empowered choices, you know, just really recognizing
how yes.
to show up in the world right now, especially right now, what we're being
yeah. called. Yeah. Yeah. And it's exactly that. It's about making more empowered, wiser choices, choices that are coming from our deeper knowing rather than from our frustration or the ego or whatever we're conditioned to think. It's like leaving that aside so we can get back in touch with our real wisdom. And allow that to shine through us.
Absolutely. And it's in there. Listen.
Yeah.
The art of listening deeply.
Yes. Yeah.
Peter, thank you. Thank you so much for this journey, this conversation, and, you know, reminding us of the importance of being still and with ourselves, and also this beautiful way of recognizing the ever conscious, the aliveness of this unfolding, you know, cosmos within us. You know, as we become more complex and more aware of ourselves, you know, we're just deepening into that which always is.
Yes.
Such a powerful way, you know, remembering who we are.
Yeah. And it takes no effort. It's just learning that skill of letting go and relaxing.
Yes. I'm into that. Wow. Peter, thank you so much. I know you have a meditation offering for everyone that they can download, which is
yes,
letting go, a meditation on letting go, directing us into that space of allowing.
Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that gift. And so everybody who's listening, make sure you click on the link by this video and it'll take you to Peter's site where you can learn more about him and, you know, download this beautiful meditation.
Lovely. Thank you.
Peter, thank you so much for you and all the ways through the decades of your life that you've shown up and given us this incredible insight into who we are.
Oh, it's been a pleasure all along, and just lovely to be here now with you talking about it.
Yes, it is, always. Yeah. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you. Yeah.